702 for the curious.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
So basically, from what I understand, what has happened is that the public protector, Busisiwe Mkhwebane, has laid a countercharge against the state security minister, Dipuo Letsatsi Duba, over a classified report relating to the so-called rogue unit. That's the SARS rogue unit, if you will remember. And it seems that this has now escalated. Now, Mkhwebane said that in a statement released today that she had done so over what she deemed to be interference with the functioning of her office and contempt for her. Now, the fight between the two relates to a probe by the public protector into the establishment of this rogue unit. Now, City Press reported 2 weeks ago that Letsatsi Duba had opened a case against the public protector for being in possession of the report, which was commissioned by then Minister David Makhlobo. Now, joining us on the line to explain to us what is the actual situation here, the charges and then the counter charges, is of course Mr. Opa Sekgalwe. Thank you for joining us. Good evening.
Good evening, Joshua, and thank you for having me.
Only a pleasure. So, let's just—it's just in an attempt to obviously understand what is the situation here. So, we obviously have the office of the public protector being taken by the Minister of State Security and charged in this particular instance. I mean, I find that very interesting. Why did this happen, and how did this happen?
Well, just to give you a bit of a background, the public protector is investigating alleged improper conduct on the part of the current Minister of Public Enterprises. And the issue under investigation relates to his past roles in a different capacity and so forth. So central to that investigation is a report that resulted from an investigation carried out by the Inspector General of Intelligence. Earlier in the year, the Public Protector wrote to the IGI, Inspector General of Intelligence, to establish if indeed this report exists, and if it so exists, to acquire a copy thereof for purposes of an investigation. The IGI confirmed that that report exists. However, he was not in a position to share it with the public protector because it falls under the custodianship of the minister. And so the public protector then proceeded to write to the minister to request that report. When it was not forthcoming, she then subpoenaed the document in question. And then as part of that subpoena, there was a meeting between the public protector and the minister, where the minister undertook to share a declassified version of that report with the public protector, because there were concerns about the fact that the report may contain details of sources of SSA, which would not be a good thing then to have it in the hands of any other person. So the minister was supposed to then block out that information and share report with the public protector. But during that meeting, the public protector made the minister aware that another document, which purports to be that particular report, had been dropped off anonymously at her offices.
Okay.
And she then required the minister to confirm the legitimacy of that particular report and so forth. So while we were waiting for all of that to unfold, it turned out that there had been criminal charges and so forth, which was mind-boggling. But the reason the public protector has, laid criminal charges against the minister is because she has subpoenaed the document, and then she still does not have it. And she's of the view that the minister is treating her office with contempt, and the minister is interfering with the functioning of the office in violation of Section 181, Subsection 4 of the Constitution, which applies to all Chapter 9 institutions. No person or organ of state may interfere with their function.
Now, I'm actually fully aware of the legislation that you're speaking of because of obviously my background. But apart from that, what I find interesting, you know, is just the facts and how they're playing out. So basically what happened, there was a meeting between the minister as well as the public protector saying that, listen, I've had this document anonymously dropped off, but of course I'm subpoenaing it from you. does the Office of the Public Protector then in turn say it's fine to redact the names of the sources for state on behalf of state security? Are you comfortable those names still being redacted?
Exactly. The public protector is not interested in the sources of SSA. She's just interested in what's the conclusion in terms of that particular investigation, as it would be stipulated in the report. So we have no interest at all with regards to the information that seems to be the basis for the minister's concerns. In any event, if you read the constitution where it applies to the public protector, section 182, subsection 5, which deals with how the public protector must deal with findings of investigations in terms of publishing them and so forth. It does say that the public protector may withhold or choose to not release to the public information that she is of the view that it should be kept confidential. And in the Public Protector Act, that is explained further to say that is information that may have repercussions for state security. So the Public Protector is fully aware of that. She would never put it out in the public information that may compromise state security.
I hear what you're saying, and obviously it is a difficult situation, especially for Chapter 9 institutions, where you don't want to be placed in a position whereby organs of state or whoever gets, whoever has a request for information from those particular institutions prefer to ignore it, and it sort of just continues on that line. In other words, we want people to respond positively when the Office of the Public Protector or any other Chapter 9 institution, for that matter, in particular when they subpoena documents, that those documents are then provided. And we know that the bits of legislation as well as the Constitution empower them to do that. But I mean, in terms of it, Mr. Sekgalwe, have we ever been in a situation where a document is deemed to be classified? Have we ever been in a situation whereby a Chapter 9 institution was able to subpoena that said document, number one? And number two, if there was a refusal, have we ever taken this matter to court? And what have the courts pronounced on this? Have the courts, in other words, said that it's absolutely fine as long as you subpoena, as long as it's a subpoena from a Chapter 9 institution?
Well, as far as I'm aware, this would be the first such case. And it is important to highlight the fact that the meeting between the public protector and the minister, which I referred to earlier, I think that meeting was held on the 15th of last month. Mm. At that meeting, the minister did make an undertaking to share the document in question or the declassified version of the document. And so she seems to have gone back on her word and opted to go the legal route, which is mind-boggling for us, because she seems not to have a problem with sharing the document, provided that it is declassified. And then I must also make mention of the fact that the public protector is well aware of the powers that the Constitution and the law bestows on her office in terms of what to do in the event of non-cooperation from organs of state. And she has categorized those powers into two. You have what she calls soft powers, which is when she writes a letter to an implicated party to say, I need this information for this investigation, please assist. And then if there's no response, she writes a friendly reminder to say, I'm still waiting for this. But if there's a clear case of non-compliance and dismissal, she then invokes what she calls hard powers. That's when she issues subpoenas. She can even, seize documents and search premises to get to the bottom of whatever it is that she's investigating. So for her to take this step and go to the police, lay criminal charges, it means that it was a last resort. There was nothing else to do. She had tried it all and it had not yielded the desired result.
So in other words, Mr. Sekgalwe, what we have here is charges being laid on the basis that, look, this is my last resort. You have not listed, the law specifically gives me powers. You have not allowed me to exercise those particular powers, and therefore I'm laying criminal charges. Are we correct in understanding that?
correct. It's contempt, actually. If you read the Public Protector Act, it refers to contempt, and it makes mention of the fact that contempt of the public protector is exactly the same as contempt for the court. Now, for contempt proceedings to kick in, you have to open a case and say, this person is in violation of Section 7, subsection 4 of the Public Protector Act, which says that the public protector has powers to direct any person to submit any document or produce any document which has a bearing on a matter under investigation, and that if that person, without just cause, refuses or fails to comply with a directive in that regard, that person may be guilty of an offence, and if found guilty of that offence, that person will be convicted and will be liable to a fine not exceeding 40,000 rand. Or an imprisonment term not exceeding 12 months, or both.
Okay. So what you are saying, or what you said right at the beginning of the conversation, was the fact that the public protector had mentioned to the minister that someone had anonymously dropped off the document purported to be this very same report, obviously anonymously and secretly.
Yes.
Are you still in possession of that particular document?
Yes, we are still in confidential possession of that document, but it is almost of no use to us because we have no confirmation of whether or not it is legitimate, which is why the public protector brought it to the attention of the minister in the first place. But while doing that, she then subpoenaed the correct version, the one that she saw that is legitimate, which is in the possession of the minister, and it hasn't been forthcoming.
So, Mr. Sekgalwe, we left with this very awkward position whereby the public protector and the Minister of State Security are, you know, facing off, or possibly going to face off in court pretty soon with criminal charges and then counter-criminal charges. And obviously that is not ideal under any circumstances, albeit two separate criminal offences, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, the one being, the one allegation in terms of a criminal offence is obviously that the public protector has obtained classified documentation through illegal means. And then obviously on your side, you would then counterclaim and say, but hang on, you're not respecting, and you're also not acting appropriately in terms of complying with the request and the subpoena, more specifically, of the public protector. Am I correct? So they're two separate cases that can't necessarily be heard concurrently.
Yes, I mean, from where we're sitting as the public protector, you know, it is in the nature of our work that whistleblowers bring information to our attention. So if a document of that nature lands on our lap from someone who may want the public protector to look into that information, our responsibility is to bring that kind of information to the attention of the minister to say, here is a document, because these documents would be, you know, labeled at the top that it's secret or top secret. So the moment we pick that up, we bring that to the attention of the relevant authority, which is the minister, and we did exactly that. But the minister's conduct on the other side is totally inconsistent with the law. I mean, the Constitutional Court has gone to town on you know, how organs of state should respond to the public protector. In fact, in that judgment, the Chief Justice went as far as to say that in doing her duty, the public protector may not be inhibited, undermined, or sabotaged in any way, and that her powers are not supposed to bow down to anybody. So those are strong words that put into perspective the kind of powers that the Constitution and the law accord the public protector, with the understanding that her role is to clean government or to rid government or the public sector as a whole of any culture of impropriety, maladministration, and so forth.
Now, we know for a fact that this is not the first time that the Office of the Public Protector has obviously had to assert its independence within the court system. I mean, we know that we have that landmarked finding of the Constitutional Court, which confirmed that when you know, when you make a recommendation, that those recommendations are actually binding in law, as the Office of the Public Protector, many other Chapter 9 institutions believe that that particular judgment also applies to them in turn. I mean, is this in essence a confirmation of this judgment? Is that what you are aiming to do by going to court, albeit through the criminal justice system?
Yes, it is important for institutions such as the public protector to make use of legal instruments at its disposal whenever it comes across situations like this. Otherwise, we will become toothless, even though we do have teeth. It becomes important then to, invoke all of the powers that you get from the Constitution, from the law, and even from case law, as we see in this a Constitutional Court judgment. All of this is not personal or anything. It's just a part of the work that the public protector was meant to do when this institution was established in 1995.
I mean, at the very same time, the allegations that you have made are directed against a current sitting minister, albeit in his prior capacity. But the fact of the matter is that he is, at this juncture, a minister. I mean, do you think that this is insidious, that this is going further, that this is a conspiracy of allies within cabinet not to cooperate with the Office of the Public Protector?
Well, we have no reason to suspect that. All that we see in front of us is a minister who is not cooperating with the public protector's processes in contravention with the law. I mean, I could quote another section of the Constitution which applies to all Chapter 9 institutions, which says all other organs of state must support or assist these institutions, and that refers to all Chapter 9 institutions, to perform their functions and be independent, impartial, effective, and to protect their dignity. So if you look at the conduct of the minister in this case, it is very inconsistent with all of those provisions of the Constitution. And that does not look good for accountability and good governance in this country.
Now, obviously, we know in a criminal matter, you don't have what we call in law prayers. So it's not a civil suit. You're not praying to the court to grant you a particular form of relief. But even though it's a criminal matter, obviously there is some type of an outcome that you're anticipating and hoping for. What is it that you hope to achieve with this case? I mean, if the minister had to turn around tomorrow and say, listen, okay, I'm sorry, I should have cooperated in a better way, or maybe I should have followed a due process by sending you on review with regards to your subpoena or whatever the case is, what would your approach be then in that instance as the Office of the Public Protector?
All we ask for is absolute cooperation with our processes so that we can be able to be effective and do our work without fear, favor, or prejudice as per the Constitution. But in terms of this particular case, it is a criminal matter, and I've already referred to what the Act says about a person who is found guilty to have been contemptuous of the public protector. They may, we find or get a jail term, but we are not really interested in that. All that we want is for people to cooperate. When we ask for information for purposes of investigation, please give us the information. If there are issues of national security and all of that, you can block out those parts of the report that you are worried about, but still live up to the undertaking you made and give us the information so that we can do our work and wrap up this investigation.
Well, on that basis, Mr. Sekgalwe, all I can say is thank you for your time, and we wish you all the best, and hopefully we see this matter resolved a little more amicably rather than through a legal system, especially in a criminal court. But just as a final parting shot, I mean, it's probably the elephant in the room. And I'm reticent to ask this, but I have to ask this question. I mean, what if, the powers that be, the people that are involved, the minister himself who has been implicated in this particular matter, who's under investigation, as well as the Minister of State Security, turns around and says that this is a politically motivated investigation in the first place? What is your response to that?
Well, I think everybody knows the public protector is an apolitical institution. But of course, a lot of the matters that come before her would involve politicians, and then some never miss an opportunity to then use politics as a scapegoat when they have to be held to account. We don't operate in the political sphere. We just do our work as per the constitution, and that's that really. We're not into politics and all of that, but we are aware that people tend to, link us to politics, either of those of the governing party and so forth, but we are not involved in any of those things. We are just doing our job. It wouldn't be anything. It has been said before, even with the previous public protectors, people saying they are playing politics when they were merely exercising the powers and performing their functions in terms of the constitution, which is to hold the state to account, including public office bearers, public officials, and so forth.
I hear what you're saying. Thank you so much for your time. All the best, Mr. Segalwe.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. That was Opa Segalwe. He is, of course, the spokesperson for the Office of the Public Protector. It's 8:30.
702 is full of moments that keep you
a political leader.